ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of the Politics Now podcast. 2026 is already shaping up to be another huge year in politics, with inflation remaining persistently high, lingering housing challenges, and now a royal commission getting underway. So join me and the sharpest minds at the ABC to cut through the political spin and bring you what politics means for you. That's Politics Now, and you can hear it on the ABC Listen app.
The possible return home of a group of so-called ISIS brides from Syria has caused a political storm. But why? Given similar groups of women and children have been returned in the past by both the Albanese and Morrison governments. Today, 7:30 reporter Adam Harvey, who's been to the Syrian camps and spoken to some of the Australian women there, on the current debate and what happens if the group is successful in getting home. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Adam, back in 2019, when you were a foreign correspondent, you travelled to Syria on a number of occasions. And when you were there, you met some of these so-called ISIS brides. Now, just tell me about that.
Oh, it was an extraordinary time. This was after the fall of Baghouz, which was that little village at the bottom of the Euphrates Valley in Syria, where ISIS fighters and their families had been pushed to at the end of that terrible period of ISIS control of Iraq and Syria. There turned out to be something like 20,000 people came out of this war zone, really. And amongst them were a group of Australians, Australian women mostly, and children and their children, who'd gone to Syria in 2014 and 2015. Some of those children had been born in the ISIS so-called caliphate in that time. Mm. And generally the men that they went with, or they went over there to marry, had been killed. So the women and children were left, and they were taken out of this war zone, many of them injured, all of them traumatised, and taken to a huge camp called Al-Hol in the middle of nowhere, really, in the desert, which I think had about 60,000 people initially.
We've found the Australians in Al-Hol. They're in a couple of tents just behind me. There's so many Australians here, they call this area Australia Street.
When you come to this, people treating you like you're worse than an animal here, you know? At the end of the day, we're human. We have rights.
And it was a tent city, and so the Australians were mostly trying to get home, trying to get out, because nobody else wanted them. The Syrians certainly didn't want them. The Iraqis don't want them. They were viewed, you know, rightly mostly as extremists. And for some of them, but they've been stuck there ever since.
Yeah, a very long time. Now, some of the women that you met back then, now this is, of course, going back 7 years, are the same women that are trying to get back to Australia today, testing your memory. But tell me, what were they telling you back then?
The women that I spoke to in Al-Hol were telling me how terrible conditions were in Al-Hol, how sick their children were, and how much they wanted to get out. They were very conscious even then about being on the radar of Australian authorities and Australian police, and so they didn't want to reveal much about what they'd done or seen at the time.
I've been told not to say anything because the government's trying to charge me really badly.
The young woman on the other side of this curtain is worried she'll be charged in Australia with entering a banned area.
I don't want to stay here, but I know how this works. I know that they do reports and then people twist the words and then all of a sudden I've got 10 years in jail for entering Syria.
Although a few of them, the ones who were willing to talk about the reasons that they'd gone there, would say things like, I didn't know where I was going. There was a young woman who said she'd gone to Lebanon for a family holiday and somehow found herself across the border in a war zone. There was another family group who said they'd gone there thinking that they were going to do charity work and help people who were affected by the war. Nobody, of course, admitted to going there to fight for Islamic State.
Well, some of this group, eight orphans, they were actually returned to Australia by the Morrison government.
That's right. And they were brought out with the assistance of the Australian government. They were taken from Al-Roj, which is a camp in the very northeast of Syria. It's a separate camp from Al-Hol and considered a bit safer for families, and were brought across the border into Iraq and then flown back to Australia.
And then, Adam, in 2022, another tranche were brought back to Australia, four women and 13 children. That was under the Albanese government.
That's right. And, of course, their acts of going to Syria and Iraq to the ISIS caliphate were illegal because Australia had enacted laws by then which said that anybody who travelled to those areas, a prescribed area it was called, was guilty of an offence. But only one of those people who came back to Australia in that period from 2019 to 2022, I think, has ever been prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
And she was prosecuted for entering a prescribed area and was sentenced to a good behaviour bond and had no conviction recorded. That's Mariam Raad.
Mm. So do we have any idea at this point what has happened to those women and children since they've been back in Australia?
If we do, we're not allowed to report on it because there are some, not over Mariam Raad, but especially over that first bunch of people who came out, that there are extremely strict secrecy provisions over where they are, who they are, what they look like. We can't report on anything like that to protect the children, because if you identify the adults, you identify those children. They have some significant involvement from the authorities, from police even now, and welfare authorities looking after them and trying to undo the damage that their parents inflicted upon those children by taking them to Syria and Iraq in 2014 and 15.
Right. Well, Adam, last week, of course, 11 women and 23 children tried to leave the camp and come back here to Australia. Now, they were actually turned around. Do we know why that happened?
Well, I've spoken to some people who were involved closely with that movement of people, of those Australians, and they say that everything was set to go, that it would have gone smoothly, but for a tip-off to the Kurdish press. Then it became international news. Here is this group of Australians who are trying to leave and come back to Australia. And that got picked up very quickly in Australia. But it also was controversial inside Syria. So the Kurds, who controlled that part of northeast Syria, had allowed them to leave. But to get out, to get into that part of the country that's controlled by the new Syrian regime, they'd have to cross checkpoints and borders, and I think they realised that that wouldn't be allowed because their movement was so controversial.
Well, Adam, let's consider now then what rights these women have as Australian citizens and, of course, the children. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, he's taken a really hard line on this, hasn't he, because he's said that the government has absolutely no intention, none whatsoever, of helping this group of people to get back to Australia.
Yeah, well, that's right. This is Anthony Albanese, who's, I think, quoted his mother to say, if you make your bed, you lie in it.
No sympathy, frankly, for people who travelled overseas in order to participate in what was an attempt to establish a caliphate to undermine and destroy our way of life. And so, as my mother would say, you make your bed, you lie in it.
And it's important to say, I think, that they have been lying in that bed for a very long time. You know, it's no picnic to live in a refugee camp in the Syrian desert for 6 years. It's not as though there hasn't been any punishment at all for those people. But, yes, they are, as Roger Shanahan, the Middle East expert, said this week, they are probably the least popular people in Australia, those ISIS women and the adults anyway.
In some instances, it might have been immaturity. In other instances, they knew exactly what they were doing in terms of just being tricked and reappearing in Islamic State-held territory in Syria. That's a very difficult proposition to accept.
nobody has any sympathy for them. If they didn't do terrible things, they were certainly aware of terrible things being done in the name of ISIS in those years before 2019. But yeah, so there's no political gain for Anthony Albanese to offer any assistance publicly to those women and children. That's in stark contrast to Scott Morrison, who I think back in 2019 said that Australians would embrace those children. They were Australian children and they needed help.
They are in a very dangerous part of the world. The children can't be held responsible for the crimes of their parents. But we must remember that both parents committed crimes, being where they were, doing what they were doing.
There's not much sympathy coming from the Labor government at the moment, and as both Mr. Albanese and Minister Burke have said, that there was no assistance from Australia. Now, that depends how you define assistance. Those people have certainly had passports granted to them, and as anybody knows who's ever tried to apply for a passport here in Australia, it's an extremely difficult process. You know, you have to go to the post office three times because the photos of the children are don't show one ear, or there's a person visible in the background. So there must have been some kind of bureaucratic assistance to enable those people to deal with the nearest Australian embassy, wherever that was, perhaps Lebanon, to get those passports issued.
Yeah, and of course we know they've got those passports after the Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke, was on 7:30 and was being probed over and over again by Sarah Ferguson, the host.
If anyone applies for a passport as a citizen, they are issued with a passport.
And to be clear,
these are automatic processes done by public servants.
That was a long way of saying yes.
I've given the answer with the words I wanted to.
The answer is yes.
Now, the opposition Home Affairs spokesman, John O'Dunham, says the government should never have given these passports out to this group of people.
The fact that they've been given a passport and the government say, oh, well, nothing we can do about it, demonstrates a government that isn't taking national security and their job seriously.
And actually, the coalition's now arguing, Adam, that it should be an offence, that there should be laws stopping people from actually helping people overseas if they've been associated with Islamic State. That's an interesting take.
That sounds like a pretty difficult law to enforce, to apply.
Yes.
Even to word it in legislation sounds complex. But there are people who have been helping the ISIS women and children. And you know, it's been well publicised that Jamal Rifi, the Western Sydney doctor, who has done all sorts of humanitarian work, he's one of the people who was over there to assist. And it was all going well, I think, until it all fell apart somewhere between Roj Camp and Damascus.
Dramatically. Now, one of the women has been issued a temporary exclusion order. What do we know about that?
Yeah, well, we don't know who it is. The government hasn't said which of the Australian women it is, but that temporary exclusion order, it's a bit vague how it works, but it looks like it's about this two-year temporary exclusion order prevents someone from getting back into the country for 12 months. And that's because there's been an ASIO assessment made that this person is still a threat.
Adam, given we have had groups of these so-called ISIS brides and children return before, as we said, why do you think there's been a change? Why has it become so political?
Well, you know, you'd have to ask Anthony Albanese that, but I think it's been easy to not do anything because it was difficult for those women to get out of Syria. As this conflict in Syria intensifies and the borders shift between the Kurds and the new Syrian regime, it's prompted the movement and the closure of camps, and so people have had to move. The Kurds have always said that they wanted these Australians to go. They wanted Australia to take responsibility for its citizens. So there's been sort of geopolitical changes inside Syria that has meant that the government here in Australia has had to do something, and the act has been to issue one temporary exclusion order.
Yeah, okay, and of course they're still trying to get back, we assume. If they do succeed in that, do you think that's something Australians will accept, or do you think it'll be all rather secretive?
Well, I think absolutely it'll be secretive to protect the identities of those children. It'll be a very similar set of events, I would say, to what happened in 2019, where once they come onto Australian territory, you can't film them or show their identity or name them.
Mm.
But there'll certainly be briefs of evidence being prepared in anticipation of the arrival of some of those women.
So they could face legal action?
Oh, I think they'll certainly face legal action. Certainly a repeat of the entering prescribed area offence, and possibly more than that, because I'm sure you'll remember at the time there were lots of social media posts and Telegram chats from some of the women about what they were doing and why they supported ISIS, videos of them, you know, holding guns and, you know, making threats and things like that. So all of that will have been kept on a computer file somewhere in ASIO, I'd say, and it might get dusted off or would be being looked at the moment.
And the kids, they'll be placed into some rehabilitation of some sort, we hope, we presume?
Well, that's right. They won't be going straight to an Australian public school, that's for sure. There'll be all sorts of help available to them to try and work out exactly how damaged they are.
Adam Harvey is a reporter with 7:30. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.